Conan, guess what?
What up?
You know, spring has sprung, and our friends at Manscaped have the best tools for some spring cleaning. And they've already helped you tidy up all the nooks and crannies of your body's basement. But this year, Manscaped can help you get the perfect presentation of that beautiful face with the new Beard Hedger Pro Kit. Now, there's a lot of neckbeards in professional wrestling. All right, so make sure you look your best this spring by using the code K100 to get 20% off, plus free shipping at manscaped.com. So for all you neckbeards out there, I know there's some, you know, there are a lot of you, but the ones that have the well-trimmed beard, it's time to tame your mane with the Beard Hedger Pro Kit. The sun is peeking back out, which means you'll have to show your face in the daylight again. That's right, you got to get out of the house. So use the kit to make sure your scruff looks award-winning, whether you've got glorious beard flow or some smooth, sleek cheeks. So the kit starts off at the Beard Hedger. It's a waterproof cordless trimmer with a rotary wheel that gives you 20 hair-cutting lengths. That's 20 lengths. That's a lot, all with one guard. So no more messy drawers full of add-ons. Like, you know how you have all those guards and you have to keep them in your drawer and they're lying all over the place? You know, it's funny, too, because my cats steal the guards.
Right.
And go and play with them. Like, I'll come home and I got the guards of my my beard trimmer, Beard Hedger, are on the steps, are on my trimmers, right? Okay, so no more of that with the Beard Hedger. It comes with titanium-coated T-blades that are tough on hair but smooth on your face, leading to single-stroke efficiency that brings satisfaction one stroke at a time. It's a high-tech piece of art, a travel-sized package with a long-lasting battery, universal charging, and a strong motor, right? So you don't have to worry about charging it all the time. And next to kit is the liquid goods that make you feel good. Start with the beard shampoo and conditioner. You gotta have that. You can't treat your beard like you treat your pubes. That's why the kit is a special shampoo and conditioner specially designed to moisturize, reduce ingrown hairs, that's very key, and replenish your beard's natural oils and promote beard health. It also has this the Manscaped Beard Oil. And the nutrient-infused oil relieves dryness both on the beard and the skin beneath while adding a little shimmer and shine to liven up the look. And then it has the Beard Balm. And it's a pomade that shapes, styles, and moisturizes, bringing the amazing scent of fresh eucalyptus, rosemary, and lavender essential oil. So it's got like a, you know, like a gel for your beard. It's awesome. So not to mention the Beard Hedger Pro Beard Kit also comes with three free gifts. A beard brush, comb, and scissors to ensure your beard is ready to impress. So if you have a beard, or if you want to grow a beard, you got to use this. It's the Beard Hedger. And you can save 20% off and free shipping with the code K100 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code K100 at manscaped.com. That's M-A-N-S-C-A-P-E-D.com. Focus on the face and use the Beard Hedger Pro Kit for the cleanest look in the game. And if you want to start a beard, you have to get this product.
This is incredible. If you haven't purchased this yet, you'll be happy you did when you do. So get all your grooming needs at manscaped.com. Boom.
It's a hell of a deal. All right, let's get the mailbag because there's a couple interesting topics right off the bat here. This one's not very interesting. Skyflame09, subject fights. Hey, guys, from the podcast, it's clear that you and Conan are good friends. Have you two ever fought against other people in a club or bar, and who won? Thanks. No, it's never happened.
Well, I thought you were going to ask against each other. Yeah.
No, because let me explain something. When we used to go out, we would always, if somebody, like we were old school wrestling, you know, because like the club scene in the late 90s was like pretty cool. I had a lot of hot chicks and clubs and stuff. But if there was ever any sign of trouble, we would always go to the security of the manager. This guy's giving us, because we don't want to, bro, you don't want to fight in a bar. You never know how many friends these people have. You can get sucker punched, everything. We would always just have security just defuse the situation or take the guy out. And they would always side with us, like 100%.
Right, because the old school wrestlers in Mexico, and I can imagine the United States, they actually went out to get in the fights,
right?
Okay, because I got that tail end of that. When I went to Mexico, the very first place I went to, bro, and I think I've said this before, they were drinking before the match, they were drinking during the match, not during the match, but in the locker room after the match, and then they'd always end up in a after hours or a fucking... They still had, like, back then, like, burlesque shows.
Right.
And they would end up in one of those. Right. And always, bro, what are you looking at? What do you want? What's your fucking problem? And they'd start fights. Just like UFC guys. When I'm around UFC guys before, they'd say, hey, man, if anything goes down, I'm ready to go. Like, they wanted to get into a fight.
It's crazy.
We wanted to have a good time, bro. We just wanted to be with our boys, hook up with some girls. And that was it. We weren't trying to be tough or act tough. So if you came with that type of energy, you got booted out. But I do remember one time, and Glenn might have been there. Bro, remember that big fight that broke out in Club La Vila the last time we were there? Were you there?
Do I remember that? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe you weren't there, but bro, there was a fight there. And I remember Road Dogg was there and he still worked for WWE. And I don't know if he was maybe in between stints or what.
That's where he lives around there.
Well, that was another thing. That was another thing. He told me that he lived close to there. What, Joe?
Yeah. Also, it was the last WCW show and he was looking for a job. He was done with WWE. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So he was there and, bro, he got into a fight with some Puerto Ricans and, you know, but that's my boy, you know, and I don't know these Puerto Rican guys. Mm-hmm. And I think they were like part of a gang and a fight broke out, you know, and some WCW wrestlers got in it, you know, to help Road Dogg. I was in there and there really, really were no winners. Everybody got tagged and everybody tagged back.
You were
siding with
Puerto Ricans, weren't you?
At the beginning. And then at the end, I went with Road Dogg. But everybody got tagged. Everybody tagged somebody. And then security and the popo came in and controlled the situation, i.e. everybody ran. But that was, you know, the only one that I can remember. Now, in Mexico, it's different. Mexico, there's a lot of fights in the arenas because there were no security. So you were your own fucking security, you know. And I was a Terminator back then. I loved to go. I even had guns pulled on me. And I was so stupid that I would say shoot, because in my stupid mind, I was like, bro, if you shoot me and you don't kill me, I'm going to take that gun away and whoop your ass with it, you know. Mm-hmm. But Mexico is very wild. Yeah, there were a lot of fights there.
All right. Next one's very interesting. We talked about this last week, this guy's question, but I want to bring it back up because it comes from a different angle. It's from Chris Anderson, and the subject is Jim Cornette's review of Roosh versus Jungle Boy. Greetings, guys, and thank you for providing a perspective on culture, wrestling, sports in general. It's great to listen to something that really gives a variety of content. Anyway, here's my question. It's a two-parter. Recently on his podcast, Jim Cornette went on a whole tirade about Roosh taking liberties with Jungle Boy in the recent match. Was he right in his outrage over what happened? And Conan, does this really happen a lot in Mexican promotions? The clip is too long, and there's no reason.
16 minutes,
right. But I spoke about this, and maybe the second question.
Did you listen to that clip, Joe, or Disco?
The Cornette clip. I listened to some of it. Yeah.
Parts of it. Yeah, yeah. He just went. He said Rush is taking liberties with
him. Yeah, he went.
But we spoke about. Him. It's like, bro, this just looked like a guy. Like I asked you. Let's go over it again. Since how long you've known Rush for a while. He's one of your top guys in Mexico, correct?
Right.
How long has he been wrestling?
Probably 15 years.
How many? Is he a second-generation wrestler? Is he and his brothers and stuff?
Generation.
Okay. All right. So this was very clear to me, being in the business. I'm surprised Cornette didn't really look at it this way. He looked at his roosters taking advantage of Jungle Boy. My thing was like, dude, there's a lot of guys in this business. Like Fit Finlay is a perfect example. The guy would eat you alive if you didn't fight back. And it's like this looked like Roosh is the type of guy that's a very vicious heel that gets his shit in and you have to fight back to get your shit back. Right. And Jungle Boy was too green to understand that this, like, bro, because you don't have a lot of this on American indies. You know, Roosh is not an American indie wrestler, which is a culture from all these guys. We're all building a big happy family. We're giving back and forth to each other. This is a guy that like wrestles like old school Mexican style. That's from a generation of other wrestlers. Like you get your shit in. And if the guy doesn't fight back, it's like when the match is over, yeah, I ate the guy alive. But it wasn't like I wasn't preventing him from fighting back. The guy just never fought back or like tried to or did it enough to where I'm going to start selling for him, which is exactly what this match looked like. And I just want to ask Conan, because you've booked this guy repeatedly, was Roosh wrestling any different than the way you saw him wrestle in Mexico all those years?
Well, let me tell – no, he's not. No, he's not. But you're right. You know, if you don't protect yourself, what would happen with Juventud? He'd eat you up.
Right,
what would happen with L.A. Park? Even to this day, I've had people – I'm in the same dressing with L.A. Park and another guy, and he comes up to me, a very well-known guy. And he's like, hey, man, what do I need to know about Park? Because I know he'll take liberties on me. You know, I go, well, don't do this or this and this and this.
And fight
but
back.
They will. They will eat you up if you don't fight back. Now, let me tell you, somebody sent me this clip because they were like, I want you to listen to this. And I thought it was a short clip and it's 16 minutes. So I just listened to like the first 4 minutes and that was enough for me, only because I don't have enough time to be listening to the whole clip. Because
right.
I find Jim very interesting.
Right.
And he does
very,
know.
Very, especially his takes on in-ring work. Right.
Right. So I like and respect Jim. you know, but I only heard like the 4 minutes. But yeah, Mexico is different because he said that, oh, there's no psychology in Mexico. You know how they do down there. Bro, you're not well informed. Here's the thing. When you order a taco, you don't expect a hamburger. You don't make fun of the Japanese because they eat with chopsticks. Fuck, when I first went there, I lost a pound of rice and fucking meat just trying to keep the two fucking sticks together. But I just learned how to use it and I knew it was part of their culture. I wasn't like, hey, where the fuck are the forks? You know? Right. But let me tell you, Jim, we do have psychology in feuds. When it isn't a feud, it's Mexican style. Now, because he also said something about, oh, the Mexicans, Penthouse and Felix, what was it that he said? You know, they'd spend all their time around the ring and they're burying the refs. Well, very easy. You should announce the matches under Mexican rules and explain what they are, or tell the Mexicans that they can't hang around on the fucking floor. You're not in Mexico like they did with us in WCW. This is how we work here in WCW. It took me a year to learn it. I had to be deprogrammed. Bro, when I first went to WCW, they put a rocket up my ass. They actually wanted to do a match with Hogan in Mexico and then another one in U.S. And they put me in with One Man Gang and I won fucking the U.S. title. And they probably realized this guy can't fucking work American style. So we're not going to push him. And One Man Gang was very uncooperative, you know. Right. But I will say this, Rush is probably thinking, you know, I'm going in there and I'm going to get over. I'm a star because Jim goes, oh, well, you know, he's not a star in the U.S. Well, he was in ROH, which isn't that big a deal. But to him, it is because he went in there. They gave him the title immediately. They brought in his dad, who's a wrestler. They brought in his brother, Dragon Lee, who's incredible, who's now in WWE. Okay. But bro, he tried to eat up Danielson and he kind of did, but Danielson at least fought back. Bro, Jungle Boy did nothing and liked it. But here's because Rush is the real deal, but he will follow the rules. Like in Mexico, he doesn't give me any problems.
Oh, I didn't notice this in the Moxley match because Moxley gave it back. Because John Moxley's. John Moxley's a very offensive wrestler that likes to get his shit in
And eat your life,
which is why you didn't even really notice. You just noticed that, like, wow, this Rush guy's, his work is better than Moxley, but you didn't notice, like, this guy's eating Moxley alive like he's doing Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy's green and doesn't know what to do when a guy's eating you alive. You know,
right. Here's two things that Jim said that I agree with him. He said, if you would have done that back in the day, you would have had a fight with the guy in the ring or the locker room, which is true. And the other thing is he said, I can't believe no agent or producer told Rush not to do that. Or when he got back to the dressing room, that's where I agree with him. An agent or producer should have said, hey, Rush should be watching the show and know it anyways. But the agent or producer should be telling him, hey, we're taking care of this guy. We're getting him ready for a fucking title match, which if they were even thinking of giving it to him or giving any credibility for him going into that match, that's out the fucking window now. But I would hope that when he came back, some agent or even veteran, because as a veteran, that's your job to smart the guys up and go, bro, the guy's getting ready for a world title match. You can't eat him up like that, even if he doesn't defend himself. You know what I'm saying? Right. But it is what it is. He went in there to get over, and Jungle Boy did nothing. And so he got ate up. Bro, he literally threw the guy off the apron, Joe, like you throw fish like at the fish market.
Yeah, it was wild.
Yeah, but ultimately what this was I think the reason that, to me, this was fascinating because I didn't really – like I had to go back and watch some of this again because when I saw the outrage, all right. But I was just looking at this because, dude, like Rush's offense just looks way better than 95% of the rosters today because he brings it.
Right.
Which is why I think this great. It's like, you remember that, bro, every time I see this guy work, it's like he looks like more vicious than like any other guy on that show. On the AEW roster, they kind of work
100%. And he's probably wondering, why am I getting pushed? You know, I was champion in Mexico. They treated me good in AAA. Bro, in AAA, he was undefeated.
He's literally getting punished because his work looks too good. So it's like, I mean, if you want
not
to
not so much punished for his work looking so good, but more of like he ate a – what they consider
getting vilified online by people that thought by guys like Jim Cornette. And I think Jim's not realized, like, dude, yeah, he ate the guy alive because his work looks 100%. His offense looks way better than Jungle Boy's, which is why this looked like he was eating the guy alive. You know, so it's
no lies there.
I mean, no lies. Yeah. All right, next one's
And here's the thing, bro. If you've ever met Jungle Boy, he's just a meek,
laid back,
low-key. He's very cool kid. He's like very cool kid. I will say that. You know, it's almost like a kid going up against a man, you know.
And then let me give you a little sidebar here. This is kind of interesting. So when I first started in WCW, I had a match against Frankie the Thumper Lancaster, right? And he was like an old school guy, and he was just a jobber and everything and all that, you know. But we went in there, and he kind of started trying to eat me up a little bit.
Right.
And, like, I was going over, and it's like, you know, after – this is my first time this has happened at WCW, but it was maybe like my fourth or fifth match. And I was like, you know, we went over the match, but then we got in the ring, and it was like he was kind of bringing more shit than I thought he was going to, you know, usually like you land a six in the match, just talk about everything first and you go out and do it. And he was like bringing more shit than, you know, I learned very quickly, you know, okay, it's like I'm not used to wrestling guys that like are getting their shit in out there. Like, what do I do in this situation? It was a very simple learning experience. I didn't have anything against the guy, but like afterwards I said the match was like, hey, you kind of brought more shit than I thought I was expecting out there. And I told him that. And he was like, well, dude, that's how it worked. You know, he's like, said it. I'm like, okay, let's, you know, lesson taken here. So after that, I'm like, you know, and I had another time when I wrestled Bret Hart, and, you know, he ate me alive too, but it was like, we had just tons of time that they gave. It's like a 21 minute match. And I was just like, I didn't really know what to do because like, we didn't call a lot in the back. He was doing it. And like, he really wasn't leading me along. He was just like offense. And then I would fight back every night. But it's like, you know, it was just, I don't know. It's just like you learn from experience. And I think Jungle Boy learned a very valuable lesson in that match against Rouge. It's like, dude, it's up to you not to get eaten alive. Nobody else is out there besides the two, you and the other guy. And if the other guy is getting his shit
but they should have told, they should have told Rouge, because they already know his style. They've already seen him. It ain't like he ain't fucking been there before. Right. Hey, take care of this guy.
But they didn't. Right.
Now, if they did, I doubt very highly, because I know his name is Williams, not plural, by the way. And so I would doubt that Williams, if they would have told him, hey, don't eat this guy up, he would have done it. You know? So nobody told him shit. That's on the agent, bro.
Right, he just went and did what he does.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Conan.
Yep.
I have something I want to say.
What up?
If you're a regular listener to K100, you've heard us talk about our friends at Legacy Sports Nutrition. Now, Nick Aldis may be on probation indefinitely, but he knows what he's doing when it comes to supplements, and you, our faithful K100 fan, have been proving it time and time again. In fact, Nick and his wife, Mickey James, were at WrestleCon in LA over WrestleMania weekend, and they met several K100 listeners who are now loyal LegacySubs.com customers as well, including this shout out here to Jay Baca, who was finally able to meet Nick in person and tell him that since he started using Legacy products about 1 year ago, he's lost over 50 pounds and over 10 inches from his waist. Jay was so excited to share his progress, he even bought his Legacy products with him to show Nick, and you can see those pictures at the LegacySubs.com Instagram page. Jay is currently using Absolute Men's Wellness Formula, MCT Oil Caps, and Ultimate Test Stack. We want to take a moment to give a shout out to Jay and huge congrats on your awesome progress. Shout out to Nick Aldis and Legacy Sports Nutrition for these amazing results. If you want to transform your body just like Jay, go to LegacySubs.com now and always use the code K100. That's K100. It's the most used code on the site ever. That's a testimony to our listeners. For 10% off your entire order and show your love and support for the show, level up with LegacySubs.com. Legacy Subs.
Yo, go check it out. They got pre-workout stuff. They got stuff to help you improve your memory. They got stuff for recuperation after workouts. What do you use, Joe?
Much like Jay, I also use the Ultimate Test Stack. I've been using that for a few months, and it's really helped when I do the fight camp workouts with energy and recovery, and also, of course, the recovery PM, as we all know, helps you sleep a lot better and you wake up very refreshed. So, been recommending this for a long time, and I still do. I mean, it's very, very helpful stuff. It'll make you feel better.
We all use it. It's very effective. There's a reason why they've stayed with us. Our listeners have been buying it, and Jay Baca's proof of its effectiveness. So get healthy, stay healthy with Legacy Subs. Boom.
I think you could make a case that of all the podcasts out there, and if you look at all the fan bases of all the podcasts, that our fan base might be the most physically fit of all the podcasts. Because if Nick is selling, if like we're the number one sellers of his products, you would think they're. I mean, you see what wrestling fans look like generally, right, Conan? I mean, that's kind of like So we're helping, we're improving the lives of our listeners one day at a time.
And
what
I think they appreciate that. Yeah,
yeah, they do. So next is from Brad Dykens. The subject is question for Disco about Disco. Hi, guys. Love the show. Keep it up. My question is about my favorite Disco Inferno match in May, June of 2003 in TNA. What was actually wrestling as Glenn Gilbert at the time was getting a serious push into the main event against the NWA champion Jeff Jarrett. I thought the more serious Glenn was a great character with major heat, but it seemed like after the one big match, the push was immediately defeated and Glenn was demoted to managing Johnny Swinger and Simon Diamond. What I want to know is how Disco felt about this angle of the match with Jeff. Who booked it and were there plans to extend the feud or character? Why didn't it go further? Please talk about the whole storyline. Don't forget the good, the bad, and the ugly. Where does it rank your career highlights? And thanks for entertaining Banner, and I hope to provide more questions in the future. That's from Brad Dykens. I was getting a push as a leader of Sports Entertainment Extreme, and that took place very organically because I cut a couple of good promos, and we just went from there with it, right? I was still in the mix after the match with Jeff because there was a match, they think, the following week where me and Shane Douglas wrestled Raven and Jeff, and I blew my back out.
Mm.
And I said, so I had a back injury. And I like, and that was like, so it wasn't the push was deflated. I got hurt. Okay. Right. And because I was still, I got hurt and I was still kind of hot on the show, I came back as a manager because I couldn't wrestle yet because my back was still hurt. And I said, I liked Simon and Swinger. I was like, this is a good spot for me to be a manager for these two guys because, like, Jeff's not giving them a lot of mic time, and they're So I just got to integrate my way back.
Now, can I tell you what Swinger told me?
What?
He had told me that you were kind of failing miserably, and that they put them in the heat to kind of get you over and keep you because you were Russo's boy. Yeah. But that's Swinger
always blamed me for, like, not getting over.
Swinger and Simon both told me that, by the way. Simon,
that's fake news. But I actually pushed for that. Bro, let me tell you something. I still say that my work as the manager of Simon and Swinger, if you look at this, like all my – when I would sit in on color commentary and stuff and thing, I think that's the best work I've ever done in my career. Because let me tell you something. That's the most heat that I've had is managing Simon and Swinger – going against the Cowboys, was it Chris Harris and James Storm? Because they were over huge as baby faces, and we had really good heat on those guys. That was good.
I thought your best work is when you lost to Jacqueline, but that might just be me.
Well, that's disrespectful. You're high, so people are going to know. Next one's from Matthew Ince, and the subject is What If. What's up, K100? In my opinion, this whole CM Punk and AW Collision stuff seems like a big work to me, but then again, I'm a mark, and I always fall for stuff. The reason why I think it's a work is because it's bad, and it's making everyone look bad. I do think it's inevitable that CM Punk will be in the ring by all in 2023, but what I would like to know from you guys is, what if between now and the middle of the summer, there's even more backstage drama with CM Punk, or even worse, he gets injured, which would be again. So, what do you see as AEW's biggest matches that don't involve CM Punk? Also, did you guys hear that AEW recently did a house show to under 900 people to venue that holds 4,000? Also, one of the AEW Collision shows is being held in a venue that holds 18,500 and has sold less than 600 tickets? Rough times for AEW ahead. Yeah, bro, I'm just saying they haven't, bro, the Wembley show and like these ticket sales on these shows tell you the climate of professional wrestling today. Weekly TV, weekly house shows and stuff are not interesting. What drives people to shows is big events and big shows, like a big deal, like a Wembley show. Like everybody's going to forego all their other things and like go see that show, which is why it's drawing well. Like a weekly show? Bro, these house shows, you look at the cards on these house shows, they're terrible. There's no good, there's no like A-list matchups
that would make you,
even the half, right. And they're doing it, also they're doing it
on TV. Well, that's their fault, bro. They got all this talent that they're paying them a year, and you can't put on fucking stacked house shows?
But not even,
and because
even
look, because as far as house shows, WWE's still doing good because they're doing a good product. We're doing good because we're putting out a good product, you know?
Somebody tweeted this. If I can find the tweet, but go try and find the AEW Twitter and how they're listing the how they show the matches for this week, or maybe Tony Khan's Twitter. Bro, they're actually advertising a match.
I haven't seen any of the matches, by the way.
Okay.
So is it true, Joe, that the matches are not interesting or not stacked?
That the house is not at all. Did they get
a lot of times WCW would stack house shows that the talent didn't show sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another thing, but they were stacked. When we went to Baltimore in a house show, what did that look like, Glenn? Remember?
Oh, Flair versus Brett, Luger and Sting versus the Outsiders.
Right.
You know, it's right. Like, I mean, like, yeah. Right. I mean, like, you know,
they took care of the big cities, bro.
Is this what you want to and see? The Dynamite card?
Well, okay, no, house show.
House show, he said, right?
I'm still talking about even the house shows. Even Dynamite. Perfect example. Like on Dynamite, like this week they're literally advertising this. Like they put this up and like it's a deal. Where is it? It's like the house. Somebody brought this up. Like AR Fox is like 0-8 in his last 8 matches on AEW, and he's being billed as advertised for a match against him and 2 other guys against the House of Black this week on Dynamite.
Yeah.
And like people look at it, like who would want to watch this match? Well, like why would you even advertise this? This is like that. This is like a matchup of like one of your prominent
most of the fans. Because the problem is most of their fans are hardcore marks, right? For fans, right. So they don't get insulted. Fans, and they know that AR Fox is good, even though he's 0-8. You know what I'm saying? So they're like just putting out
another
his name,
good match.
But if he's so good, why is he 0-8? Yeah, it's like, you know, makes no sense.
Right.
You know, bro. And then I'm looking at this. Okay, so let's go. We've got a contract signing between Jericho and Adam Cole, which could be good and interesting. We'll hear from Ricky Starks. That could be hit or miss. Sometimes he does great ones. Sometimes I'm like, what are you doing? House of Black versus Blake Christian, AR Fox, and Metallic.
It's like, why would you, bro? Look at the guys you have on the bench that could be wrestling House of Black this week. You know, right. but this is a mega list of guys. You know, it's like.
But here we go again for the hardcore. Metallic is a guy that was in WWE Arena Mexico as I believe Máscara Dorada. So they know he can go. And Blake Christian's this young guy that everybody's raving about. So all the hardcores know who he is. So, again, this is for hardcore fans because the casual fans going, who?
Right. Dominic said that. Did you see Dominic on Raw said that?
No, what did he say?
He said, who? Because they were mentioned. That's somebody great. Said, yes. Somebody, right, yeah.
He might have gotten that.
He should get that over. And they credit us.
Yeah.
Next is from Narsk Rigigig. And the subject is Wyatt plans. There was a report over the previous week the current plans for Bray Wyatt to make his big return again to WWE for SummerSlam 2023 for a possible match with Cody Rhodes at the event. It had also been said that due to Wyatt's track record of suddenly needing time off, WWE have already backup plans in place for a third Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar match just in case. What I would like to know for you guys, especially Conan, is how would you handle and book Bray Wyatt's return to WWE, and also, how would you handle a talent like him who, whether it's his fault or not, has gained himself a reputation for being a person that WWE simply cannot rely on?
Well, I'm a big fan, and my past will show this, that I give people second and even third chances. If you're very, very special, and I really think that, you know, you can be redeemed, I've even gone as far as a fourth, but that's very rare. You know, if I feel that we can't rely on you, I just have to let you go, you know, because I – at the end of the day, what I've learned is when I get rid of guys that are a problem or a pain in the ass or a headache, usually they never change. And the only thing that's happening is somebody else is inheriting my problem. So here you go.
Next is from Long Grand Wang. Subject is Hardy's done. Conrad Thompson just referred to Disco Inferno as, quote, a highly controversial podcaster, unquote. Why? Because he speaks his mind and isn't a fucking shill? Anyway, guys, a few weeks ago, an episode of Rampage was hyped around the Hardys doing another deletion match, and the final rating for it was like 280,000 viewers. A total utter disaster on any metric. My question is, and this one hurts as a longtime Hardys mark since I was a kid, do you think that they're done? I mean, Matt looks like he's in constant pain. Jeff Riley should not be risking any more pain or injuries, and clearly the American public don't care about them enough to want to tune in. What do you guys think? Also, if Billy Body is such a big-time podcaster, how come no one has ever heard of his show? Let me, the Hardys, you know, you can just tell Matt's got a bad hip and it slows him down in there. Jeff should be more of an attraction, and it's like they're not really treating him like an attraction, you know? I don't know.
I didn't even know they did, like a final deletion type.
Well, nobody watches Rampage.
I didn't
even
know
about
it.
You know? Yeah. I mean,
but why wouldn't you do that on Dynamite anyway? That is an attraction in its own way if it's placed in the right, you know what I mean?
Tony books these shows like he doesn't understand that nobody watches Rampage. You know, because they don't really reference a lot of the stuff that happened on Rampage. And, you know, it's like you're not doing a lot of packages of this happened on Rampage. Like, you know, I don't know. It's just weird.
And yeah, he puts more time and invests more time into Ring of Honor than he does Rampage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and if Collision is – go ahead, Gunnar.
My thing is the guy saying his question was, are they done? Was that it?
Yeah, the Hardy's done. Yeah.
Because they did a low number on Rampage or something like that. Yeah, okay, so bro, that's not the only metric to measure their success. You know, these guys could go out on the indies and make maybe even more money. I don't know how much they're making now, maybe making more than they are now, but they'd have to work more, right? There's still a big name. There's still somebody you could, because to
I'd
me,
I'd argue that.
Okay. You can honestly, argue it all like, you want.
Well, I'm saying FTR against the Hardys. If you advertise right. that 4 years ago,
right.
that's an appealing match today. I mean, well, am I right?
Here's the thing. In Mexico, they're still very hot. Like, if we were to mention them on any big show, the show would be either sellout or close to a sellout, you know, in Mexico. In the indies, they'd be very hot. And they still have name value. Would you rather put on a show, I'm going to ask you, Disco, FTR against the Hardy Boys or FTR against Jimmy Utah and Daniel Garcia?
Well, if it gets the Hardy Boys, because I think we'll draw more people.
Right. Well, they still have some benefit. That's my point. Yeah.
Next is from our boy Jed Frankfurter of the Ebony and Ivory podcast he does with Mike Holder. That's been a disaster.
Can you tell the people why that podcast got broken up? Because some people are new and don't know.
Yeah, Ebony and Ivory, the whole idea was to discuss social and political issues. You had a black host, you had a white host. And it was
and racial harmony, by the way.
Yeah, and it was supposed to promote racial harmony, see how these guys could have a conversation, maybe agree to disagree. And it never turns out that way. It turns into a shouting match. I think Holder once even wanted to drive to his house to beat him up, and it's a mess.
Well, I believe the show ended because the show on racial harmony between a black and a Caucasian ended up in fisticuffs. Exactly. So I like that. I like that a lot.
It can't be trusted in the same area at the same time. That's for sure.
The subject is biggest underdog in sports history. Hey, Keeping 100 Crew. The show keeps getting better and better. I give much of the credit to Joe.
Wait a second.
Why don't you have the kazoo ready?
All right.
I saw something on Twitter the other day asking for the biggest underdog in sports history. My pick was James Buster Douglas, so I was curious what you thought, what you three thought, and what your answers would be. Thanks to this very best friend of the show, Jed Frankfurter. Buster Douglas would be in there, but I still think that the 1980 United States Olympic team beating that Russian
team. That's what I was going to say.
Anybody knows the history of leading up to that, the Russians came over to the United States like a month before. And we're playing exhibition games against NHL teams and destroying them like 10 to 3. And they looked like a flawless, like every goal was a highlight. Like it was tic-tac-toe, boom, 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 pass, goal, right? It just makes them look silly. And they just got beat by a bunch of like guys that weren't even in the NHL. Like it was just a bunch of college kids, like, you know, and like journeymen and stuff. And then they beat the best team on the planet. And they should never. It just should never happen.
They were very feared, very respected. The Russian national team, that was like a national sport where hockey was not a national sport here. Okay, right. There were college players, as you alluded to, and what a lot of people don't remember, and I'm sure you do. A lot of people think that was a championship game. No, that was a semifinal. They ended up beating, I believe, Finland in the finals.
Right.
I was Holly Holm beating Ronda. That's a big upset.
That is a big upset. They weren't as big as Buster Douglas was a 50-1 underdog.
Oh man, that was
Holly Holm was like 8-1.
But people
that don't know about odds, just right. talking about upsets, that's a big upset.
Right. So next is from Sumganda Chanko, and the subject is wrestler nicknames. AK100 Crew, I know Disco listens to Cornette here and there, so he might have heard some of these. But I know Conan probably hasn't heard any of these wrestler nicknames created by Jim Cornette in his podcast. I'd like to get your thoughts on some of them. That's part of the entertainment of Cornette is hearing the names he comes up with for the wrestlers. Plumber Moxley.
Wait a minute.
He calls him Plumber Moxley. He looks like a plumber. calls Nick Gage the bank-addicted drug robber.
Okay. Wait a minute.
Calls Orange Cassidy our little dog Pockets.
Right.
He calls Renee Moxley good, in a posh English accent.
Mm-hmm.
He calls Tay Mello old bitch face. He calls Will Ospreay Will Ostrich. He calls the best friends the Pudding Gang. He calls Chuck Taylor Chucklefoot.
Wait. Who is the Pudding Gang? Is that some white boy shit I don't know about?
I don't know what that is either.
That's probably
the Pudding Gang.
Yeah, I don't know what the Pudding
No, but I'm saying, is that from a show? Is that a comic? Is this some Southern shit I don't know about?
Yeah, that's probably some super old
Why
reference.
Don't you look that up, dude? The Pudding Gang.
Yeah.
The next one's Chucky Fuck Taylor.
Right.
Brandon Cutlet.
Right.
Michael Nikazawa, he calls Michael Knock It the Fuck Off.
Right.
He calls Don Fallis the Invisible Hand Job.
Wait a minute. He might have gotten that from me.
The Invisible Hand Job?
Yeah, I remember I said that he was no longer... Because he said he was the invisible hand. And I said, I also heard you the invisible hand job. Maybe you Zippy don't remember
the giant
that. You're
pinhead
on the show.
That's Adam Singh. He calls Kenny. He calls Kenny. Kenny Omega calls him Twinkle Toes McFingerbang, Kenny Olivier, and Harpo Fingerfuck. And he calls the Young Bucks the Hardy Boys, the Buckaroos, and Pie Face Buck and Balding Buck.
So, I can't now, out of all of those, which ones do you find funny, Disco?
The Invisible Handjob, Don Fallis.
All right.
Chuckle.
I like Bummer Moxley.
I like the bank addicted drug robber too. Instead of the bank.
Which
the
do you like, Joe?
I like Chuckle Fuck Taylor. And yeah, but we're someone had to explain to us the pudding gang because I ain't finding shit. I'm sure.
Okay, so I like. Yeah. Okay, if somebody knows some guy in the South that knows what the pudding gang is, please let us know. Plumber Moxley, I like Big Pop for that. And the only other one that I like is I would take the finger fuck out, and I like the Harpo. He does look like Harpo Marx a little bit.
Next one's from Ick5150, and the subject is question. Sup, squad. Thanks for the 2 weeks off. Question. Mm-hmm. What's the better franchise? Die Hard, Rocky, Star Wars, or James Bond? And he has asked me to announce Conan's name in the Fink's voice. I'm sorry, but we don't take suggestions.
Yeah.
The best franchise is Bond, in my opinion.
I like Rocky.
Really?
I have to go with Rocky.
Well, they're all decent, but I think
Die Hard's great. I mean, the first three.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they had some stinkers, though. So that's, mm-hmm. you know. All right, next is from Neil DeMood, and the subject is stripper gimmicks. Hey, fellas, there are many similarities between the adult entertainment business and the wrestling business. For the first time since the start of pandemic, I had the pleasure of enjoying an evening at a local gentleman's club. At this particular club, each performer had their own gimmick. A nurse, teacher, and soccer player were a few of the gimmicks that I observed during my visit. Do you guys have a particular favorite gimmick when it comes to exotic performers? I myself am addicted to the maids.
Ooh.
Do you see what he did there, Joe?
Neil, Conan, what are you doing?
Suspend this guy.
Suspended for a week.
Did you like the nighttime effect, Joe?
Yes. It's my favorite.
All right.
I don't have it. I mean, there's always like the schoolgirls, you know, and stuff like that's, you know, I don't know. Next one's some CJ.
They used to have one in Mexico where they had this girl in a humongous, like, I wouldn't say it's a champagne cup because champagne's more like this, but it was this big round fucking cup. Mm-hmm. And she was taking a bubble bath, which Joe didn't want to do, but she would be taking a bubble bath. And then she had a swing that she would climb up with and do tricks and swing. And then they'd invite somebody out of the fucking audience to get into the bubble bath with her, which was awesome. I always thought that was a great gimmick.
So next is from CJ Emanuel. Mm. And the subject is Jim Brown, RIP. Hello, K100 friends. Another one of my heroes, legendary Jim Brown, passed away recently. To this day, he's in the discussion of who's the greatest football player, let alone running back of all time. He's also considered the GOAT in collegiate lacrosse. Mm. Beyond that, he was a movie star, social activist, and straight-up bad motherfucker. He's one of these still significant influences in my life. Jim Brown personified black and proud. What are your thoughts on Brown as an athlete and his life after football? I didn't really get to see Jim Brown play because I was too young. But I was very impressed with the level of respect he had, that he actually like went into the hood and got the Bloods and the Crips to have a truce. Like he got the gang leaders together and just basically they said, "Yeah, we need to, like, you know." Did you hear about that, Conan?
Yeah, of course, bro. Yeah, I know his whole story. I'm a big James Brown, Jim Brown fan.
Here's the thing about
Jim Brown, though. Jim Brown was like you before my era. You know, I don't even think I was born yet, but I did see him on video and he was just destroying everybody. And everybody was saying that, you know, he was a power runner, you know, like you would see somebody like, you know, Earl Campbell or somebody, let's say in today's like beast mode, he'd just run over your ass. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't about juking and trying to fucking, he just ran you over. And I saw like Rosie Greer. Remember Rosie Greer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Rosie Greer said that he fucking hit him as hard as he could, that James Brown still took him around, you know, 20 yards, just fucking pulled him back 20. Another guy was talking about that James Brown had broken his helmet. Another guy was saying he had chipped his tooth. Like, he was a bad motherfucker. Not only that, he was considered, which back then I can assume not a lot of black guys were playing, he's considered the greatest lacrosse player of all time.
But
anyways, you know, he was in there. He got tired of football and he you know, movies probably paid more and was more glamorous, and he got into movies. He was a big action star. I remember him very vividly in The Dirty Dozen, which was a great movie. And then he, you know, he got a lot of heat for having like interracial his scene with Raquel Welch, you know, who's Mexican and super hot at the time. And he got much respect because back then, as I said earlier in the show, you know, he went out there with Ali. Bro, Ali lost like 3 years of his fucking life in jail because he stood up for his beliefs. And I used to love what Ali used to say. He goes, no Vietnamese guy's ever done anything to me, but the white man has, so why am I going to fight for him? Which he was right, you know? And so he went to jail for that shit and got ostracized and lost money. And he was at the peak of his fucking career, but he went in there, you know, and he got a lot of heat because he was Muslim. Mm-hmm. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar got a lot of heat because he used to be known as Lew Alcindor. Mm-hmm. And people, you read about him, all the racial shit that he had to go through, bro. And he went out there on the streets. And he was doing it. He was risking his career and he was risking his life. And Jim Brown was one of those guys. And Jim Brown the other day was saying in an interview, he said, none of these guys give a fuck anymore because they're making so much money. None of this, you know, they don't work. There should be. He said, can you imagine what happened if Michael Jordan wanted to get the 100 most influential black guys together and do something? He ain't going to do it. Neither is LeBron. Right, because they're paid.
Well, you know that famous.
And they're working for the white man who he knows will not be happy with that. What?
The famous Jordan quote where he says something like, you know, people, when there is an interview or whatever, you know, why don't you get more involved in this stuff? Jordan said something along the lines of, Republicans buy Nikes too.
Yeah.
You know, so that's his reason. But Jim Brown, you know, Conan, you mentioned his acting and stuff. There's a small role that he played in Any Given Sunday where he was like Al Pacino's.
Yeah, I remember that.
Something he was great in that, man. In the little time, the little character development it had, I thought he was excellent.
Next is from Jared Drizzle, and the subject is a food for thought. Hi, Conan, Disco, and Joe. Was looking back on something about the idea of the plan of NXT going global. Even though that was 2018, now that there's a discussion about Nick Khan talking about creating a lucha-style show with the success of the wrestlers as of late. My question is, if this does happen, do you think it'd have the same effect that the UK scene had, or had a dead period after the creation of the show? Just curious to see what y'all think of the speculation. Rest easy. That's from Jared. Bro, the last thing wrestling needs is more content. They need to fix the content that they have right now to make it better to draw more fans. Is this spreading more content out is just going to dilute the product, in my opinion.
Well, here's what Khan said in this at this telecom conference. It says Nick Khan discussed the potential of adding more WWE content. Ideally for us, we would go every day of the week as long as there is a unique product we can put on the air and resonate. Something we discussed eternally. Internally, Lucha Libre, which is big in Mexico and Latin America, to start something like that down the road. This would be well after U.S. and U.K. media rights are settled. The synergies are all in place and we have our legs under us. That's something that's interesting to us, especially with a growing Hispanic audience in the U.S. We over-index in the Hispanic community already with our English content. To target that is something of interest for us. So maybe we'll see an NXT Mexico or something one day.
Well, he's smart, bro. He's trying to hit the... Huh?
What'd I just said, all I have time for is SmackDown, Raw, and Dynamite. That's it.
Yeah, right, but if you're Latino, if you're Latino, which is the biggest minority in the United States, and I've said this before and I said again, we'll be majority minority by 2043, we'll be majority minority in the workforce by 2033. So you're going to have to serve us sooner or later. You know what I'm saying? And not only that, I brought this up before and it's worth repeating. Since the census have been taken, since our first president, George Washington, last census, the largest population, 16 and under, are non-whites. It's called the browning up of the population. And out of those nine non-whites, the biggest population is Latino. You're going to have to serve us.
Well, that doesn't mean you have to give them Lucha Libre.
Why not?
Sure, it does.
That's your right. Why is there a food section in every fucking major market that says Hispanics?
We're talking about
that is the point. You're serving a Hispanic crowd.
Visual wrestling content. If they're born here, why are we giving them the type of style that they wrestle over in Mexico?
Because the biggest minority, which is about to become the majority, is living in this country. Why would you not want to give them soccer, lucha libre, and anything else they like?
Wrestling is not based on race. Okay.
Yes, it is, because a lot of Latinos want to watch Bro, you're absolutely wrong. Well, I can tell you this. Most Latinos I know would rather watch a Lucha Libre show than an American show, whether you believe that or not.
Okay, but my point is,
if it's geared toward you,
you can get Latino wrestlers that don't have to wrestle the Lucha Libre style. Well, that's the point I'm trying to make. If they're born here, get more Latinos into the business, okay? But you don't have to teach them that, like, the other style. It's just weird that, like, they're in Mexico, they've always wrestled a different style.
Why is it weird? Why is that weird?
Because that style has had trouble resonating over here. It's a different.
When they came up with it, they weren't worried about the United States. They were worried about getting crowds in Mexico. And here's the fun part of all this. Even though at the beginning, when we first went to WCW and you were there and we were disrespected, they talked over our matches, they made fun of us and all that shit. Guess what? Now Lucha Libre is everywhere, and everybody. I was just talking with a Laredo kid, and he was like, "Hey, you know, because I needed him for some interview." He was like, "I can't go because I'm going to Belgium to do a lucha match, bro." That makes me feel good. When I went to Canada not too long ago, when I first went to Stampede, because that was like my first territory outside the United States, nobody knew what lucha was. Nobody knew how to wrestle except one guy called Jason Anderson. Thank you very much for letting me stay at your crib. Mm-hmm. But he was the only guy. Nobody knew what it was. Nobody knew what it was about. Nobody knew how to explain it. Fast forward to like 2005, Teddy Hart brings me out for a show in Stampede. I hadn't been there in like 20 years. And before I even came out, the whole crowd was chanting lucha, lucha, because it's everywhere now, you know. The problem is a lot of people watch videos and they don't do it right, and that's what makes it look like shit. But the guys that know what they're doing, it's fucking creative and it's an art, you know. Mega disagree with you on that.
Yeah, you have the right to be wrong. Next is from William
Molina
Jr.
Don't use my own lines on me, please. Thank you.
Next is from William Molina Jr. Subject is going to business for themselves. Good afternoon, K100. My question for Disco and Conan: have you ever had a wrestler go into business for themselves when the ring with you? And also, have you ever had a wrestler go into business for themselves where you're an agent or booker? What would happen if a wrestler ever went into business for themselves? I've just been stiffed a couple times. Like, you know, not a lot. We spoke about a couple things like earlier in the mailbag. The guys go into business for themselves, they usually get, you know, they get punished. This is something you just didn't see this a lot. At the level that I wrestled at, when you're at the level like WCW, WWE, you don't see a lot of wrestlers going to business for themselves because you're risking your career and livelihood from the pushback you're going to get for doing it. And it's just something that
heat in the locker room.
Right. It's just something you just don't see guys do, you know. If there are cases, they're very few and far between. Like, perfect example, the freaking, remember when Sammy busted open Matt Hardy with the chair, and he was like off TV for a while, right?
Yeah.
And then shit like that. That's what happens. You usually get taken off TV, you know. So you don't go to business for yourself, right?